Feral Audio.
Well, hello. It's time for another episode of Drew Droege's Minor Revelations. Oh boy, I have a lot of emotions going on today, as we all do. It's Monday. This is coming out on Friday. Who knows where we'll be by that? But and it's weird because I always record my intros after I do an episode, and I'm in a much better place. And I promise you, a really fun and delightful show with my two guests, Julie Brown and Jessica Chafin. And so let me do quick little plugs and then sort of get into where I am. I always go through like these emotional mornings before I come to do this show, and I get all fired up and I have all these thoughts, and then I feel like sometimes I sit down and it's a jumble and I'm like, I don't know. But anyway, let me plug and talk about my guests a little bit first before I get into what all is going on. Jessica is going to be, you know her from Ronna Bev podcast, the Ronna and Beverly podcast, which is just the most delightful thing ever on Earwolf. But she's going to be hosting a new podcast called The Kibitz, with Dan Crane, that starts on October 17th. She's also a voice on Big Mouth, which was a cartoon that I was lucky enough to work on season two. I had nothing to do with season one, but do check out Big Mouth on Netflix because it is the funniest, most painful, beautiful. It is puberty brought to you by Nick Kroll and Andrew Goldberg, and it's just so delightful and great. And so Jessica is fantastic on that. And then my other guest, of course, is Julie Brown, who... you know, from 8 Million Things, from Just Say Julie to Medusa to The Edge, which was one of my favorite shows growing up, sketch comedy shows. And she is going to be doing her musical version of The Homecoming Queen's Got a Gun, which I get to play the homecoming queen in. So we're doing it together on stage. If you're in LA in October the 13th through the 21st, I believe, it's if you if you search for Casita del Campo or juliebrown.com, you can get tickets for that. If you're in LA, we're only doing four shows, so catch it when you can. And it's a blast, and it's just, you know, be with Julie Brown, and I can't believe I get to be Debbie the homecoming queen against her. Okay, so again, I'm in a much better place. I had a really rough morning, as we all have. The shooting happened last night in Vegas, and it always brings up so much. And here's the thing. My brand, to get really gross and talk about my brand, is to talk about some horrible person at Starbucks and be like, this is what they did, and then this is what I said, or this is what I observed. That gives me a lot of life to observe a terrible, minor, small human behavior, some awful thing someone says. I find it really fun to sort of share that or say, here's something about people that really kind of gets to me. And I like to be a little Andy Rooney about whatever. And I feel like an idiot talking about some major thing, but then I feel like an idiot not talking about it. So I'd rather be the idiot that talks about it than just sort of pretend like this didn't happen. And it continues to happen. And also what happened today, or was announced, I think it did literally happen today, is that Tom Petty died. And so it was just this thing where I just really went through this place where I was like, I'm so fucking tired of old white men. Like, I'm tired of these fucking white men ruining our country, ruining our planet as fast as they fucking can. It's like they know they're about to leave the earth, so they're like, I'm gonna take out as much shit as I can with me. And just when they revealed who the shooter was, I was like, of course it was a fucking old man. It was a white man who, of course, that's what it was, who it was. And, you know, and again, it's the argument. It's like, had it been, you know, a person of color, it would have been some sort of Black Lives Matter or ISIS thing. And it's, but since it's a white man, it's just some kook, something mentally ill. But there's something fucking wrong with white men. And I am a white man, and I am a part of the problem. And I think it's that we have to acknowledge that and feel responsible for that. And we know this was not this particular case. We don't know anything. We don't need any details. He had gambling debts, I guess that was it. Or maybe not even that. I mean, maybe we'll know more by Friday when this comes out. But we refuse to acknowledge the, like, how, you know, this horrible thing that white men are doing and older white men are doing. And we have one fucking trying to ruin our country every day who's in charge of all of us. And it's sickening to me and it bothers me. And the most heartbreaking thing on November 9th was every person of color I talked to was just like, yeah, business as usual. And that was heartbreaking to me. I mean, the white people were outraged. We were the ones who, oh my God, I can't believe this happened. And, you know, black friends of mine were like, I can. Hello. And you're like, oh fuck. This is a real problem. And, you know, this is something that I don't know what it's like to be a person of color. I don't know what it's like to be a woman. But I do know what it's like to be straight. And that's the difference. You know, black people know what it's like to be white. Women know what it's like to be a man. Because walk outside and see the world and see how things get rewarded and see how things, you know, get excused and ignored. And it's just shattering to me, and it's a lot of feelings. And then we have someone who's of the similar age who is one of the cool old white men who is like the fucking definition of old cool white men, and that's Tom Petty. And you're like, oh, we fucking lost him today too. So it's this really upsetting feeling about, and I don't even know how to, but just there's something so crazy ironic about these two things. These two men who were of similar age, who just like changed the world in different ways, that we are dealing with. But I'm really fucking done with it. And I think it's something that we have to own. We can't say, well, it's not my fault. I didn't have anything to do with that. We need to own that we fucking own slaves and that we fucking were the Nazi. I mean, something I learned when I went to Germany, one of the most unbelievable slash like weirdly awesome thing in Berlin is that there is so much ownership of, you know, of what happened there. And it's saying, look what we did. We pulled people out of their homes right here. You know, there is art about it. There are plaques everywhere. They're saying, we did this. And as our country, we're saying, it's not our fault. It's not me. And I feel like, you know, we just have to fucking look at the fact that it is us. And we have a major problem. And yes, it's guns, but it's also this fucking entitled generation. I mean, talking about kids, like to blame millennials or kids of being like these messes. No, let's look at baby boomers who, what the fuck have you really gone through? I mean, I'm sorry, but like with all due respect, I look at that timeline and I don't say this lightly, but you had Vietnam, which was a horrible thing. Other than Vietnam, you guys, what have you gone through? You had jobs handed to you. You're so mad now that women and people of color and gay people are rising up and getting things that you think that you should have. And, you know, fuck you. We're in this together, you know? And I just, that's where I am. I'm getting more emotional about it as well. You know, gay people still can't give blood. There's also that thing that's going on that it's like people trying to help. And we still deal with the fact that is, if there's anything that I am so passionate about as a gay person, it's the fact that I can't give blood to another human being. It's the most humiliating, dehumanizing, evil thing that's like, you know, they're worried about AIDS. Like, hello, don't they test all of the blood? I posted about that today and I was mansplained by a straight white guy why the laws exist. And he wasn't agreeing with the laws. But it was like, yet again, I had a fucking somebody who's not gay tell me like, this is why this is happening. And it's like, we have to stop doing that. And we have to like, I need to learn so much more about that because I'm on a mission to learn about this blood thing and how we can really make that a big cause. And I really want to learn more about it because I don't know much about it. I just know that there is this law that I thought a few years ago got reversed, but apparently not because a lot of people are talking about it. So please send me things, educate me. And I also just need to shut up and I need to stop. I need to be aware of the fact that if I'm ever like, you know, unaware of my privilege or I feel like I need to explain something to someone, you know, maybe I don't need to do that. Maybe I just need to be quiet and I need to listen because, you know, we're the problem. White people are the devil. How about that? All right, let's have a show. Oh, I'm sitting here with Julie Brown and Jessica Chafin. Hello.
Hi, Drew.
Goodness. Oh,
hello.
My God. Hi.
Hey, how are you?
Well, you know, whatever.
I
can't even say I'm great. I guess that's the thing we're supposed to say when we see each other. Like, I'm great.
This was a rough Monday.
It was a rough Monday.
Like, I don't know how.
Really rough day.
How current events you like to go, but this was like not only a Monday, but a Monday.
It's been a real Monday.
Yeah.
I'm getting ready. I always record my intro after I do the show.
Okay.
And I am going to get into it, and I will say, and people listening will have already heard the intro.
I have
no idea where I'm going with it, but I have a lot of emotions and stuff.
It'll be in there.
It will be in the show. But I'm just grateful to have an opportunity to talk to people today.
I know, me too.
You know,
yeah. I thought of this as therapy.
Oh,
right?
I do it every week. I'm like, thank God I get to do this.
I'm going to talk to people to therapy.
You are.
But I felt exactly the same. Because you know how it is in LA. Sometimes you're like, I'm just have a bunch of busy stuff I'm doing, but I'm not necessarily seeing another person today unless I go out of my way.
Yes.
And this was definitely a day where I was like, what a delight that I'll get to go.
It is really nice, and I really do like to.
Andrew Droege. That's in my head. You're an Andrew.
I am an Andrew.
No,
I am an Andrew, but I've
you're
never.
You're Candy in my head. You know that.
I knew you were going to bring up Candy.
I can't stop.
My mom's name is Candy, and she listens to this. So she
loves Candy.
She loved the shout out.
I just love the name Candy Droege.
Is her name Candace?
No, her name is actually Edwina, but. Welcome to the South, where everybody has nicknames.
That doesn't make sense,
always
right?
Always sweet as candy pie.
Well,
so then they called no.
Her name from Bert, her maiden name is Crane. So my grandparents were like, wouldn't it be cute to have a little Candy Crane? So my mom was Candy Crane forever. And she is such a candy when you meet her. You would never think her name would be Edwina. I mean, my grandmother's name is Edwina, but she goes by Wena.
That's just rude.
It's so funny because I've never considered it because she just is such a weena to me. But I know it is. You would think anybody else, especially now being like, hey, weena.
Because it could be weener in Southern talk. Of course.
Weena.
Weena. She's a real weena.
But weena. But I just don't ever, when I hear Edwina, it's like so strange and so removed from my mother.
It's very formal also.
Yes. Yeah.
And no one has named that now.
No one's even named Edwin anymore. But it's like a 19th century like spinster,
and like a
British novel, you know.
Yeah, don't disturb Aunt Edwina. She's up in the attic, you know, cross stitching, knitting a revolution.
Of my mother, so I can imagine being like my mother Edwina. But I love that you
always
call me Candy.
I just love the name Candy.
We went on just because of his mother.
I knew his mother's name was Candy. Oh. He came on my podcast, Rana and Beverly, and we talked all about Candy, and I think it's because he was carrying Candy's bag that day.
Candy had
a monogram bag.
A monogram bag. It was when we were on our trip actually to San Francisco.
Oh, is that what it was? Yes.
And it had a monogram bag that said Droege on it.
And
that's what Candy Droege gave us for Christmas the year was monogrammed Land's End bags because that's what you do.
Fabulous.
Great gift.
Yes.
Great gift.
That's what you do. So
I never have stopped calling him Candy.
Okay.
I've even screamed at him in traffic and he gets, you've never seen a word terrible. Terrified, like I'm driving by because I live not too far from you.
Yes,
and I sometimes see him walking on the street, and I'm like, Candy, and he's like literally jumps into a bush with fear, and I'm like, I don't know if Drew has any idea who I am or if he just thinks I'm the crazy lady that's calling Candy.
I love it, but I also just it's so not my own name. So even though it's my mom's name, I sometimes might hear it and just think panic. And I think we live in panic right now, and it's like at any moment you're like. Someone just screamed. Last night I went into my bar, Franklin and Company, in our neighborhood.
Is that your bar?
It's my bar.
Uh-huh. That's your spot.
I have been going there a lot lately because my friend Frankie Frascator, who I will need to name drop as well, we meet up at Franklin and Company And I went in and there was somebody that works there.
So he's Franklin and you're in company.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, he also calls
Frankie.
His... Yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah. So Frankie and Drew like to have nightcaps together. We meet up at Franklin and company. But I walked in yesterday and somebody that worked there just screamed, Drew Drogi, when I walked in and I panicked.
Yeah.
Because I was just like, whoa. And I just felt like... There's a restaurant full of people, and I just was like...
You ruined all of their meals.
I bought all of their meals. I just was like, you know...
So I said, please, I'd like to buy everyone's meals.
That's just how I am. That's how I do.
How is the service at Franklin & Co.?
It's, you know...
And what do you eat? I'm curious. Like, what you will eat? Because their menu is dicey at best.
They have a turkey burger that I do enjoy.
Okay.
They have a salad, kale salad that I'll sometimes have.
Oh, I love that.
You know, and I might put some chicken on it just because I can't have it too healthy.
Extra protein.
A little protein. And, yeah. Are you a vegetarian, Julie?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
But I have like eating things, you know, like I don't eat wheat.
Right.
Or soy. And
I knew you were really healthy.
And
like,
I don't
really
drink
good.
And...
Have you always been a teetotaler or did you?
No, no. Oh my God, no. I was becoming an alcoholic in my 20s.
Oh, okay.
Completely.
Wow.
But I was married to this guy and he was really an asshole. But I didn't know that because I, like, every night I would have some wine. And he kept saying, this marriage is going great. And he kept telling me it was great. And I'm like, I'm so unhappy. What is happening?
Wow.
So I just had the idea. My dad was a big alcoholic, too. Uh-huh. So I, you know, that's not great.
Was he a gambler, your father?
No. Just a full-on alcoholic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, if I stop drinking, maybe I'll figure out what's happening, you know? And I did, and I suddenly was like, oh my God, he's an asshole. He's a nightmare. And then within, I think, a year, year and a half, I was divorced.
Uh-huh.
And then you go, okay, am I going to start drinking again?
Right.
And I have such a negative feeling for myself. Now, I don't pass like judgment on
of
somebody
course.
Else.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Some people, yes, but
sure.
But,
well, yeah, when they can handle.
Well,
you know,
yeah. We thought you'd be sort of fun.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not.
I don't pass judgment on anyone. Well, go have dinner with somebody else.
No, I do.
I just wanted to say that. I knew that you didn't drink, but I've never known you to be judgmental of people who do.
No,
except for when people are.
But it's
nightmares.
It's obviously was a thing in your life.
Yes.
You have seen wreak a lot of destruction.
It's so destructive.
So you were like, I don't need that near me.
No, yeah. So I didn't. And then I never started again because, well, when my son was really little, when he was a baby, there was a point where I wasn't sleeping. And I thought, maybe if I had some wine. And I did. And then I went, this isn't going to work.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
So then I haven't. Mm-hmm. And now to me, it seems like it would be so weird to drink.
Yes.
Right? Because if you've lived... that long without it's weird. And I know most people don't want to do that. Right.
That explains why your skin is so gorgeous.
Well, thank
really
you.
Is.
Yeah, it does, though.
I know. I mean, as I'm like three scotches deep, I'm like, oh, look at that. You know, I know. I really admire, it's like just knowing your position with alcohol and not having to be like, I have to get to a horrible rock bottom place in myself to know that it's just probably not great for me, or yeah, like it's wrapped up in other stuff, and it's
right.
Just like why go for
I
it?
I had that same epiphany with cocaine too.
Oh really? Yeah. Oh yeah.
At the same time, or
kind of around the same era? No,
yeah.
It was before that.
Uh-huh.
It was like when I first came back to LA from acting school because I grew up here, and everyone was doing coke, right?
Right.
So I did it, and then, you know,
I loved it.
I still do every now and then, but I have to be really...
I know.
I have a thing where if I do too much, I immediately shut down and I hate it. Like, I do very little and then I'm good, and I don't need to do more. I'm only lucky in that way because... And it has to be on special occasions because it can't be... Because it can get real...
Out of control real fast.
And I think... But I'm that way with coffee, though, after two cups of coffee.
Yeah.
If I have more than that, I get tired and really cranky and, like, I hate it. So, like, I just... There's something in my system that just shuts down after
stimulants.
Too much...
Stimulants. It doesn't
too
like
many
too much
stimulants.
Stimulant.
Yeah, it really...
And then you get angry.
Yes. Like, really prickly, cold, angry, like, mad. Either way, but yeah, so anyway, yeah, but I've heard the stories of like, you know, that people would just be like, oh, I'm tired. Oh, we'll do a bump of coke.
Oh my God, everyone was doing coke. I mean, I did one of my first TV jobs, Happy Days.
Mm-hmm.
I did that on coke. Wow. I know. By myself. It wasn't like I was doing it with Fonzie, but I was like, yeah, that's a good idea. I did it. But and then, you know, people were doing it, and suddenly I did it on a New Year's Eve, and I woke up the next day with that feeling like you have the flu, the way Coke can make you feel.
Uh-huh.
And I went,
Every ounce of serotonin removed from your body. Yes. Yeah.
And I went, this is a horrible idea. And this is how I'm starting the new year. I'm never doing this again. And that was the end of it.
Oh, okay.
So it's like I have a moment where I, you know, go, that's it. And it really happens.
And you stick to it. That's what's really interesting, though.
And worse than cocaine is all the stuff that they cut it with and stuff.
Baby laxatives and, you know,
all kinds of stuff.
Gasoline.
Potions. Exactly.
Yeah.
Powdered creams.
Powdered creams.
Powdered creams. Pearl creams.
Talc.
Instant mashed potatoes.
You never know.
So
what did you do on Happy Days? I don't think I ever knew that you were on Happy Days.
I played this girl named Susie Simmons, and I talked like this. My name was Susie Simmons. And they said I had to act like I had a retainer in, and I was Ralph Malph's girlfriend.
Of course.
On a camping episode.
Oh my God.
So I was like, hi, nice to meet you. It was really fun and weird, though, because, okay, Henry Winkler, right, was the Fonz, so he thought he was all that. So it was
so
like the
funny that he was the Fonz.
It's ridiculous.
Because if you know him now.
I know. He's
like the
grandpa.
Sweetest, yeah.
He's supposed to be the nicest man.
He is really nice.
Now.
He's like, so nice that you're like, is he crazy?
Yeah.
No, he's just a nice guy.
Yeah.
But he comes up to me on the first day and he goes, so what are you doing for lunch? And I'm like,
The Fonz wants to have lunch with
Well,
them.
He didn't. That's why I go, well, I don't know. He goes, because I'm going out with my friends. So I went, oh, my God. Like, he just wanted to see me get excited about the possibility. And I'm like, what an asshole. Like,
and
isn't
I love
that
it.
Weird?
Yeah. That's kind of a joke in our show, in the Homecoming Queen's Got. You use that in our, you know. Julie has turned her classic song, The Homecoming Queen's Got a Gun, into a musical, which I'm so happy to be a part of. I can't believe you just told me we first did it 4 years ago.
It's so weird, right?
But we're doing it again in October, and there's a line about that where, you know, that you get to, you know, you channeled your experience
Fonzie
with the Fonz.
Experience.
Oh my God, I love that.
He plays Debbie. He's so hilarious.
I honestly am sitting here thinking to myself, I think I probably know every word to that song.
You've got to come see the show.
You have to see it.
I come see anything you do, Candy.
Well,
Candy's amazing in
Candy
it.
Candy is Debbie. I really do look like Candy when I put that wig on because that hair is...
Is that how your mother
mom,
looks?
My mom had that hair in the
70s. Oh, I know she looks like you in a dress.
It
I don't need
like,
to be told that just by looking at you. Oh, can't you tell? Is your mother like 6'2"?
No, my mom is insane. No, I look a lot like both of my parents. I see my dad and me a lot. Like as I get older, I see a lot more of my dad and me. But then I also see my mom when I put the wigs on. And it's the blonde wigs. And it's that, like, it's when it's feathered like that. And
yeah.
I see my mom and like in the 70s when she, you know, in the 80s when she had, you know, the do's. Because she always had the trendy haircut.
Yeah, the flip, the Farrah.
The
Farrah.
She had the Farrah.
Did she ever have a perm?
I don't know. She definitely had, the 80s, she definitely had a very... Princess Diana hair.
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm. It
like
was a lot of that.
Thick feather
cute. Yes.
On
yeah.
top.
Yes.
Yeah.
Short-ish.
Was, yes. And then it got shorter and shorter. And now she's growing it a little bit longer. It's like shoulder length.
Oh,
now.
That sounds...
She's
not
so
like
happy
a,
right
not
now that
like
we're talking.
Not like a great idea, though.
No, it is. It actually
the
is.
Long hair.
I will tell you, she's got really good hair.
I'm imagining
really
like... A Cindy Lou Who flip.
No. It's not
that.
I'm just saying.
Like a Cloris Leachman.
So,
yeah.
No.
Yeah. When's the flip coming back?
Oh, my
I know.
God.
What
it's,
happened
oh, it'll
that?
Be back. It'll be the, back.
Like
they
the,
all come
you mean
back.
Like
like hair the good,
Brady.
Like Cindy Lou Who, down and then flips up
yeah,
on
like
the
Yeah, Carol Brady
yeah.
or Marla
yeah,
Thomas.
Yeah, exactly.
That
yeah.
girl. Yeah.
Kendall
exactly.
Jenner will be sporting it soon, I'm sure.
Sure.
There you go. And then
well, they'll go, it'll progress from sort of belle du jour to that. Like, it'll start there, and then it'll end up, and you'll be like, you know.
There's the flip.
Yeah. With the Edward Scissorhands. Jones.
Oh God!
Kind of bow in the
any
hair.
Any hair that's that deliberate is always a bad idea.
I know,
like,
right?
When you're like, it's such a
it has
a,
to be
a
set.
Hard style. Yeah. Like it's just never gonna be good.
When everything's that's how they look. It's so weird mm-hmm. to me. The Kardashians, like every single thing on their face has been perfect.
They've thought of everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like if you look at those pictures of Kylie Jenner, you're going, what is happening here? She looks like a painting. Like
oh, wow.
She's walking around like a painting, you know?
I don't know what she would look like if she walked in right now.
Really?
I do.
Yeah, no, I mean.
Yeah, I do too.
I don't know. I know every bump of that girl's face. But, yeah.
In fact, yeah. I was looking at a picture of her earlier today, wondering exactly what sort of nose job she had had. Because uh-huh. there was a picture, there was some, like, of course I was reading the Daily Mail, which I always am, mm-hmm. and it was like, Dr. Simon Orion says he would never give lip injections to a pregnant woman, because I guess it's one of those things, like, Botox and fillers haven't been tested on pregnant uh-huh. women or something. Uh-huh. And so, of course, that's a story.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, paragraph story.
Of course.
Which I am deeply, you know.
Sure.
There she is.
Look at this.
Go Greek.
See, doesn't she just look like perfect?
Engineers have just put up a picture of Kylie Jenner.
But click on the picture of her in the pink tank so you can see the before.
Oh, wow.
So I was this is the exact photo I was comparing that nose job.
Yes.
That nose to that nose.
No, okay.
Just so a little thinning. It's just a little thinning.
Looking at the Kylie Jenner now, I would recognize her and I would say that's Kylie Jenner.
Yeah.
So I know that. Yes. But I don't know what she's up to. Was she on?
She has a show called Life with Kylie,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, she's pregnant, okay. Yeah.
And it's horrible. She's got her friend, and they're going, let's see what's on the internet. And they're just like, and they're always checking on how they're doing on the online. And
wow.
She has that super child star thing, which child star is a weird kind of nomer to attach to her, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. I mean, I guess she is a child star, like of this generation, but that thing of they're just completely vacant mm-hmm. unless they're given something to do, they're literally like vessels, so that you meet them and they're like hi and their hand doesn't even exist, like they it's just like bones and like it's just wet noodle. And then when you're like, we need you to speak into this microphone or something, it's like a light bulb goes on and then they're able to do that thing.
Yeah.
But
it's
fascinating. I was literally just talking about this with, I did Bitch Sesh a few weeks ago.
Have you listened to Bitch Sesh?
I haven't.
It's such a fun show. It's so great.
It's like a Real Housewives recap.
Yeah, no, I know about it. I just haven't listened. I have podcasts I have to catch up on.
Yeah. So anyway, we were just talking about her because I was saying, in brief, I was just saying that, like, you want to get plastic surgery, you want to do whatever you want to do, great. But she's such a young girl, and she's only 20 now. So actually, the difference between that picture that we just saw of her when she's about 14 and now, she's had so many procedures done, so much alteration to her body. And also, like, it's brutal to have that kind of work done to your body. You have to recover from it. Yeah. It's not like she just, you know, the sister got a little lip filler. It's like, oh, all right. I mean, if you don't like it, wait 6 months, you know, or whatever. And I just think she must be so depressed and having such a weird identity crisis because literally there's almost nothing left on her body that's her.
Right.
So it's like, who are you?
She's not like fixated on, like, how can I fix
that's what I mean here.
They kind of just abandoned her. Like, they gave her this business, but she kind of exists outside of the family unit in a way, and they're all about the family. Like, it doesn't shock me that she's going to have a kid now, even though she's 20.
Right.
Because what do you do?
But there's got to be something first of all, the what everyone said, it's like it becomes an addiction because you're like, you fix one thing and you got to fix another thing. Now you got to work on this. Now you got to do this.
Yeah, it's like redoing a house.
And then also when you're handed all of this so young, you don't know who you are. You have no drive. You have no desire. You have no perspective.
And the people that are supposed to be saying to you, you know what, let's wait till you're 18.
I know.
Are saying, let's do it.
Let's do it. I know. And
can you imagine if your mother, also, like, what does that do for your self-confidence if your mother was like, yeah, I do think you could have bigger tits mm-hmm. and look different than mm-hmm. what I made. Like, that's supposed to be the only person who's like, you look great to me.
As you are. Yeah, you exactly. Know? I know.
Or you could lose 10 pounds or whatever they say. But they don't say, like, how about if that wasn't your face?
Yeah.
I'd love that. What do you think? You're like, can you imagine?
And you're like, to be human is to hate your face. So,
Also like the relationship of a mother to a child is literally staring into each other's faces. Until you're tall enough to be the same height as your mother. It's like your whole life is your mother getting in your face and being like, what do you want? Do you want to do this? Do you want to that connection is like altered.
Right.
Oh. Your face is different.
She's bad shit crazy, Chris Jenner.
Oh, right? Like a fox, though.
Yeah. 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 I mean, she's a moneymaker.
Yeah. She's a good businesswoman.
Yeah, but... Yeah.
Because didn't
those ratings were plummeting and they are all having babies on schedule now. Three of them are having babies within months of each other.
But the sex tape was her idea, right?
Calculated, yeah.
Was Kris Jenner's idea. Like, my daughter's sex tape. You know, like, that's a great, you know.
I wish my mother had had that much confidence in my sexual being. Like, I'd be a totally different person if my mother was like, you are desirable and the world should see you fuck a black man. That's what the world should see.
Right, exactly.
And I would have been like, you're right. That is what people should see.
My God, we're going to completely change your body. Then we're going to put you in pornography.
Yeah. And people are going to respond.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
you're going to love it.
You're
going to love it.
Anyway, I just don't understand why anybody would want to be that level famous. I would not want to be a tenth of that famous.
Like, no, it's...
There's no... I have zero interest in that. And, you know, the older I get, the less ambition I have for that. I just don't...
But also,
I'm so grateful that I'm not, like...
What it's that
I don't
thing,
like
though,
walking into
like,
Franklin and Company and having someone scream my name.
We
know someone that I know. Yeah. I can't imagine, like, if that's your life, your reality, that just is no way to live for me.
But do you think... And I'm curious, Julie, because, you know, obviously there were just like years and years where you were the face of a thing. You know, like you, like there weren't that many people doing what you were doing.
Right.
And I know you're living in LA, so okay, there's a lot of famous people around and stuff. But it's really interesting to me because the concept of fame to me has always been tied to your work, meaning like, yeah, I don't know. Maybe someday if I did something that was great enough, that touched people enough, then it would be okay if people felt like they had a connection to me in some way. I mean, like when I saw you, when I came in here, I was like, oh my goodness, I can't, like you had a huge fundamental developmental influence on me, you know, as a young comedy fan. And so that is like,
truly.
But that stuff is totally visceral. And you're like,
but like you said,
you know,
it's based
gaspy.
On work. It's based on your work. And it's
like
not
these
like...
people, their work is just like, what am I going to wear today? So I don't know. I guess I was just curious about like, you're not necessarily yours, but Drew's or whoever's feeling about notoriety, let's call it, for your work. I mean, that's something you would be comfortable with, right?
Absolutely.
Or you would want, because it would get more work, but you wouldn't want to.
They like what I do. It's amazing, and it's really touching, and it's like, oh, that's so cool that whether you like this show or whether you like something you've seen me do, you know, it's very, it's really sweet and touching. And it's always nice when people are nervous to tell me that, because I'm like, oh my God, please. I would love hearing that. But the screaming at you when you're
the
trying to
scrutiny.
Get into a car, like you walk outside, or did you, I mean, you must have had that at
some
point.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah,
I
sure.
did. And you... it was, it's kind of overwhelming. And I wouldn't say I loved it ever, because to me, what I was always doing was about what kind of work I'm trying to do, what kind of idea
and
what
characters
kind of, and what I'm trying to put out there. And that's what was interesting to me. And then the fact that it worked and then people knew who I was, it was, you know, sometimes it's people. Most people are sweet. They are. They come up and they tell you. But then you get assaulted sometime by people who think they can just scream at you or even grab you. You know, that's really creepy.
Yeah.
And
why would a person ever just touch another person?
They do. And you're
so
like,
nuts.
What the hell?
Yeah.
And because, you know, like if you perform somewhere or you're out somewhere, they can be drinking.
Yeah.
And they lose all the perspective. And they, I think what happens
She's
is they
so
go.
Anti-alcohol drug.
I know. I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry. It was like,
my God. I came here thinking I'd be offered a cocktail.
I apologize.
I was hoping to pour a little Bailey plays into my coffee.
I love my fans, my sober fans.
My fans. I think what happens is people like.
No, but you're absolutely right.
They see you and they go, I know her. And right. they just like, right. They that's lose, it. That's
like,
it.
I want to touch
lose
it.
Their minds.
Yes. And it reminds them of something, you know, from the past or something. And, They don't look at you really as a person. Mm-hmm. They're looking at you as a thing from their
right.
life.
Yeah.
You know?
Like if you yes. saw a Smurf, you might want to
exactly,
hug it.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'd well, hug a Smurf you know, if I saw one.
Our friend Sam Pancake was either, and I maybe have said this yeah. before.
I don't know. Anything that happened to Sam Pancake.
I mean, it was either on Curb Your Enthusiasm or Arrested Development, one of those two shows. He was one. It was. I think it was on Curb. I think Larry David called him a cunt on the show, and it was a big thing. And
oh, no, so people just screaming him all the time,
running up to him, going, "Hey, cunt!" and like in his face.
Oh.
And I think now, I mean, he's told the story enough that he realizes very quickly what that is.
Yeah.
Right.
But can you imagine
no.
what that, you know, reality
every
is
time,
for people when
yeah.
it's just sort of like, that's so upsetting and it's
yeah.
so violent. And it's like, that's a, you know, people are like, you know, and it's like, we would be mentally ill, deranged creatures if we walked around all the time, like prepared with full knowledge of all of our work. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
if like
yeah.
oh, that was quoting that TV show I was on 10, 12 years ago, whatever. It's like, you don't think like that. You're not
yeah.
always going.
No.
And John Waters always talked about, he talked about one time that this woman ran up to him and she was like, I'm glad I got an abortion. And he was like, excuse me? And then it was, and then she kind of got, and she's like, that was a line
that
in your movie.
Your
and he was like, oh, right. And I wrote that line, but in 1980, you know what I mean? I was like,
yeah.
I don't remember. I'm
no.
not constantly walking around going, yeah, that's a line from my movie. That would make you
yeah,
really creepy.
That's happened to
but
me a lot of times.
No, I'm sure.
People will quote something and I go, I don't know. Because
right.
if you did write it and then you just did it, you don't like, it's gone from your brain.
And you're sitting
well,
watching
right?
your own
well,
work all the time.
Well, who would you be? Yeah, if you were like,
oh,
that's one
be
of mine.
So weird.
Like every time. yep. Like one of mine.
I've met comedians like that, though.
Yes,
they know that
I know.
They're.
Well, those are the people that tell the same jokes for 20 years.
Yes, exactly.
I know.
And you're like, you cannot keep doing this to people. I know. I realize this is like a tourist trap and they're rotating new people in, but you cannot. You have to write a new joke.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, you have to.
You do. You yeah. absolutely
yeah.
do.
And you can't just sell the same jeans
you can't
for 25 years.
Well,
yeah.
and people mean well, like you said, most of the time.
Yeah,
but
they
also,
are.
They. I think a lot of times people want to get... They want to get a step closer than just saying, hi, I'm a fan, I like what you do. So their way in is to show you, like... Because sometimes I've had people act like... I don't give a shit about who you are, what you do, but my roommate loves you. Or something weird, this
oh,
weird
yeah.
backhanded thing.
Yeah.
And you're just sort of like, okay. And
also, like, you don't have to talk to me.
Exactly.
Like,
and I was
no
like,
one
I
is making you come over here and
I
talk
didn't
to
go
me.
Up to you
yeah.
and say, hey, what do you think of my work? And like, I didn't, you could just, you could talk or not
yeah,
talk.
Yeah, I didn't invite you to interrupt my conversation.
Exactly. Just to kind of tell me that you are, but they
well,
want to be
the
like.
That's equivalent of, what do I know you from? And you're like,
uh-huh.
no.
Oh, I know.
No.
I know.
But it's part of that, it's an extension of that whole, selfie thing, which is
mm-hmm.
that people feel like they should get a picture of something, whether it's like a praying mantis on a flower outside of their door,
right?
Or you at Franklin and Co.
Yes.
They're like, I better get a picture of this.
Yes, I know.
And that you're like, which it's just like, if you want one, that's
yeah.
very nice.
Of course.
But if you're just taking one because you think there's something here to take a picture of,
yes,
it's crazy.
It is very,
and you're interrupting your own life. Like,
right.
I want to be clear. It's like somebody has a genuine compliment to give you. There could be nothing nicer in
Nothing's
the world.
Nothing's nicer than that.
But it is weird when they neg you.
Yes.
Yeah. Where they treat you like it's kind of treat how you treat a pretty girl. Where you're like, I hope you don't think I'm going to buy you a drink. And you're like, I hadn't even thought about you. But now that you say it,
right.
I certainly hope you are. And then
yeah.
it's like, gotcha.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's that thing where it's like, I want to be closer to you, so I'm going to be familiar, and I'm going to treat you like we're friends already.
Or I'm
like
the, or I'm funny. Yeah, I'm funny, so
right.
I'm the funny one, so
and
I'm going to make a joke at
like,
you.
And
yeah.
I, yeah, you're right. The whole MO is you don't have to talk to me. I'm not asking for it. And I don't assume anybody knows who I am, and I've you know, and both of you have, I mean, you have such a following with Ron and Bev, and it's like, but I know both of you, like, neither one of you walk around like that either, like, you must know who I am, you know.
No, but
so
I did have
so
a funny
weird.
Thing happen to me once, though. I was in Budapest, with a girlfriend of mine. I was doing a movie over there. This was a couple of years ago, that movie Spy. And I had a lot of downtime, Julie, because I was in like 1.5 scenes. And half of one of those scenes, there was a mouse on my chest.
Yes, I love that movie.
Which I put it there myself, which to this day, I'll never understand why. But it was like, you know, when you're quote unquote acting, I'm like, I know what they want me to do. And then I was like, this is a filthy rat that came off the floor of someone's apartment. Like, they don't have any health and safety standards in this country.
They put real mice all over you.
I put it on me, but they were like, can it go on your hand? And I was like, I think we all know what we wish would happen here. And the mouse actor was nothing if not respectful, I will say. He didn't urinate on me. Nothing happened. Yeah. But I was having lunch in this like lovely remote garden up by the castle or whatever with a friend of mine who had come. She had business somewhere. And so she was like, I'm going to stop on the way. And it was really just us and like two other tables. And we started going deep on like all of our friends. Like, what do you think's going on in that marriage? What do you think's going on? You know, like we had like two bottles of rosé in and we were thousands of miles from home and we were like, let's spill it. Like, let's spill it all. And this guy at the next table just kept kind of looking over. And I was like, so I said to the waiter, I'm like, I think he's trying to get your attention because there's only two tables out here.
Yeah.
And there's no reason why these people should be like, like it just kept happening. And I'm like, sir, like these people, of course I'm inserting myself in there. I'm worried about whether they're getting service. like a person can't ask for a waiter, course that's what I end up doing. Yeah. And he said, excuse me. I'm trying to get your attention. And I was like, oh. And then I was like, oh, shit. So now of course, they're American. And because it wasn't such a like everybody's American place, you know, where you assume everybody knows.
Right,
and they were like, he's like, are you Rana from Rana and Beverly? And I was like, and he was like, I heard your voice from across the thingamajig.
Oh my God.
Was like, not only did he hear my voice, he heard my intimate opinions about everybody's relationships. And I just was like, after that, they were very lovely.
Yes.
And I, of course, thought he was like a gay architect from Brooklyn. And they were like, oh, no, he was traveling with his two best girlfriends. And I was like, and do you have a boyfriend or a husband? And he was like, no, I'm straight. And I was
I
was like, this has been wonderful.
Can I
pick up your check? Yeah, of course. Exactly. Anyway, that was too long of a story. But the point just being that sometimes people hear your voice and you're like,
Yeah. Exactly.
But really no one ever
and then
recognizes me for anything.
I don't know when I'm going to learn the lesson that like, on the flip side, because every now and then I'll get that vibe and I'm like, oh, he totally know who I am.
Right. And they're like, can you get off my shoelace?
And I went, just this weekend, I was in Palm Springs for a friend's wedding celebration and I forgot my bathing suit. So I went with a couple of friends to go get a bathing suit and we went to Trina Turk because I want to spend $400 for a Speedo.
Or Mr. Turk.
Mr. Turk.
Right?
We went to Mr.
Her
Turk.
Her husband's store, yeah.
And so I went in there and the sales guy was so nice and I was there with two friends. And both of whom are very accomplished, well, you know, actor, comedian friends as well. So I don't know why in my disgusting narcissism, I thought I was special. But we were all kind of talking and chatting, and he was really familiar with us. And also like a salesman kind of thing. But he was also, I was like, he knows who we are. He knows who, he recognizes us and whatever. So then the two of them were, I got a bathing suit and then I'm walking out and the two of them walked out in front of me and he stopped me, grabbed my arm and he got kind of shy and he was like, hey, and I was like, he's going to say, I recognize you and whatever. And I just want to say, or all three of you or whatever, you know, and I was ready for that. And he was like, your fly is down. And I was like, oh, thank you, sir. Thank you very much. That's way more helpful than telling me that. But I was so gross because I was just about to go, yes, I am. You know, and he was like, you are going to walk out with your dong on the street. So enjoy your life.
That's awesome.
I want to hear some stories or opinions or whatever.
Well, let's see. Because I didn't know I should have thought of the story, but of course I have stories.
Oh, you have 8 million.
Had a life. Well, I think, you know, that's what's weird is we're talking about music. Like, I can't. When I had my son, it was an emergency. Like, I almost died, right?
Oh, wow. Oh, no. I didn't
yeah,
know that.
It was, yeah. I never told you that.
Previa placenta or something like that?
No. They were inducing the baby because he was so big. He was so big. Wow. So they induced it, and then it got screwed up. And the anesthesiologist who was doing the epidural, he's like putting the epidural on my back, and he suddenly goes, uh-oh. And I go, what? He goes, well, and then it went turned into an emergency situation, and then the epidural went up my spine, which paralyzed my lungs, right? I know.
Oh,
so I'm looking at everybody, and I can't
breathe.
And so suddenly, it's like I'm unconscious. They get the baby out. They get the baby out in like 30 seconds when they do a C-section, which I didn't know that.
No, I didn't know that either.
But my poor husband was there freaking out.
Your second husband.
Yeah. My second husband. That's right. You're right. He was freaking out, and I was unconscious for like 6 hours or something. And he kept saying, "What's going to happen?" They go, "We don't know."
Do they put you on a respirator in that situation?
No, they didn't. I guess, or maybe they did for a while.
You must have felt like you were drowning. Is that what that felt
I just
like?
Had this moment of like. Yeah, it was horrible. It was like where you think you're dying because you can't, you know, because if you take a breath, you it's the effort you put into breathing. I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And you're going, oh like
my
it's
God.
So horrible.
And you're
oh
exerting
God.
So much effort
I know.
And your heart's
oh,
so
oh
horrible.
My God.
Oh.
So then, okay, so then.
It's like sleep paralysis.
Yeah, it was like that. Oh. So then I finally wake up like six hours later and my one thought was, I hope the baby's okay. And so they gave me the baby. The baby was fantastic. He was, because that was my fear, you know. And I thought if anything happened to him, and he was perfect. But then I noticed that after that, then I had this thing called a spinal headache because my spinal fluid was uneven because of the, I was so insane.
My God.
The whole thing was so horrible, which is why
a
I have one kid.
Spinal headache.
Yeah, which is if you sit up, you get an insane headache because your spinal fluid is not imbalanced because of the epidural. So
it's like the opposite of craniosacral. It's like what craniosacral is based on.
Oh, really?
That kind of work is about manipulating your spinal fluid.
Yeah, it's
so
horrible.
That you're balanced.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so,
and like it's very relaxing.
And I'm trying to breastfeed, so of course you have to sit up. It was just a nightmare. But then I noticed that as, you know, after he's born, I suddenly can't listen to music. I can't. It just fries me. And this goes, I mean, for a couple of years. And then I really started to pay attention because I was so caught up in the baby. And, I mean, it's taken me years to figure out what it was. But it was, I think it's PTSD. Because PTSD [S2] Wow. [S1] Can make you super anxious and sensitive. So it really manifests in, like, background music makes me so anxious.
We were just talking about this before we started recording about how you were like saying when you go to like Ralph's.
I start to get panic attacks.
Was music playing in the delivery
room? No, I think it's the overstimulation of you're shopping and there's this horrible whining music playing. You know,
Can you stand people eating?
Yeah, that's okay. It's just like it's more just like if there's too many sounds going on at once, like too many sounds, I start getting like. That really bothers me. So I think it's really
so crazy,
weird.
Like as a musician, and
I know,
as, you know, always performing and singing and
I
like
know.
Around music so much. Then it's like what a
I know, and
bummer.
I can't listen to background music. So I can listen to music if I'm specifically listening to it. But when people are always, you know, wherever you are, people want to put background music on. And I'm like,
I know,
it's like a hum of something that's going. Which is really weird. And I also noticed that when my son was little, you see moms, they can, like the kids yammering and doing all, they make a lot of noise.
Yes.
All the other moms could tune it out, and I could not ever tune it out. I could never tune out
God.
What he was saying.
That's
oh my God.
Awful.
It was, and he talked a lot. So
have you seen We Need to Talk About Kevin?
No, I'm too scared to see it.
And here's something that, like, have you seen this movie? Justin?
No.
Okay. I can't imagine being a parent and watching that movie. That's something that, like, I've told my brother. I'm like, maybe don't watch this movie. I mean,
what's it about?
It's about, and it's
Kevin's
obviously
a psycho.
Not, yeah, it's obviously not your story at all, but it just made me think of this insanely evocative scene in the movie. Tilda Swinton and John C. Reilly are the parents of a kid who ends up being a school shooter. And the movie, it's brilliantly titled because the whole movie, you're like, you need to talk about what's going on.
Right.
And Tilda Swinton plays a woman who is very intelligent. You love these people. That's the thing, too. Like, they're just these really smart, cool, like, Silver Lake people.
Right.
And she has a baby against her better judgment because she's like, I guess I should have this kid. but you can just tell she's never really wanted a kid and never felt right. that need. And she gives birth to this kid who immediately has no connection to his mother and is great with his father. And so the dad doesn't even see it. And so it's all about the all the kind of, and it's.
Is it a horror movie?
Yes, it yeah. is. It's very much told like a horror movie. It's a brilliant movie. I could watch it once and I will never be able to see it again.
Yeah.
But there's an amazing scene where she can't handle the baby's screams so much. And she goes out into a construction zone and pushes the stroller out into the end to hear jackhammers. And she just to hear as much other noise as she can other than the baby. And she has a moment where she breathes and then she still hears the baby over the construction thing.
That's great.
And I remember it's so powerful because I was like, I feel like that would be me with a child. Like,
right.
I love my brother's kids so much. And I'm just like, I would have the hardest time because I'm very sensitive to noise.
Yeah.
I can hear an ambulance miles yeah. away and people laugh at me. And I'm like, there's an ambulance. And they're like, what? And then I
have that with smell.
Do you? It's so weird how like you have certain things, but because like I will, and being an improv teacher made it worse for me because you have to be paying attention constantly. Oh. And I'm that weird teacher that I'm like, if
tuning in, yeah.
clicking a pen in the back of the room or with candy or making a wrapper or
right.
too much noise, I have to stop a scene and go, can you stop? And then they look at me like, oh my God, their teacher's crazy.
Right.
But I'm trying so hard to focus.
That's
and
what
I can't,
I'm talking about,
yes,
though. It's the two
really
sounds are like,
yes.
you know, and I didn't have that before I had this trauma.
Wow.
So, and then it's taken years to figure it out, like why, and I'm super sensitive to sound.
Do you get nauseous if the sound is like too sharp or too
no but like much? I've been in restaurants I can't eat if it's people are talking really loud or there's too much music or the music is too loud or the restaurant's too loud
I can be the same. I can walk
isn't that weird
it's very like unpleasant
a, there's some people's voices it's always when there's the one voice that has to sit on top of the other voices in a crowded room there's always the one who has to sit like that and I'm like I can't handle this person and I fly into a rage.
Well, you have exactly this is what I have
and I know
I do the thing with voices though.
People make fun of me.
If I hear someone at the next table I listen to whole conversations.
Oh, my God.
But it's the high frequency voice.
And it's also, we're trained to do that. That's what we do for a living, is to pay attention to weird information and go, that's something. Yes. Hold on to that. Use that later.
Yeah, totally.
You know? And so you hold on to it, and then you're like, I can't not hear this. And I'll be with people, and they're like, Drew, relax.
I know.
Calm down. Look at me. Hi. Deal with me.
And you're
me.
Like, no.
I can't.
Because I'm having dinner with this person now.
Yeah, because that girl is occupying all my attention, that girl. You know what I've done sometimes? Because when it really bugs me, like, if a girl's talking like this and telling her friends, right? And I will start doing her voice. I'll go, oh, yeah. I just want to. And my son has freaked out. He goes, don't she'll hear you. I go, they never do.
They never do.
So I keep experimenting with that. And I think they're deaf to their own sound.
Yes.
Clearly, right?
Yes.
That they sound like an idiot.
I know. And words don't even matter.
No.
They're an idiot by tone. You know, it's like, I don't even care what you're saying.
I know. But if you notice, people don't really sound
like
that.
Because they don't have to.
I know.
They don't have to work that hard.
I know.
And I'm like,
it is a terrible trend, though. The sound of, not to be totally misogynistic for a minute, but the sound of women's voices now.
Yeah.
Just the trend of like, I don't want to like say anything that might not sound smart or particularly it's my problem is with women who are smart.
Yes.
Who are doing the thing where they're like, I guess it's kind of like the military industrial complex after the Second World War, like meets the communist interference in Eastern Europe, like that sort of thing. Is that what you mean, Drew?
Yeah.
You're like, or you could just say it.
Or you could just say it.
The thing.
Yeah,
just say it.
Yes. The
like, I don't want
apology.
You to not find me attractive while I'm saying this. Cause like, I'm also a totally viable, attractive sexual being.
The pressure
who doesn't want to threaten
women
you.
Women put on themselves to be everything. And also
like
the girly
just have an
thing.
Opinion.
The little girly thing.
Where
is
Christiane Amanpour when we need her?
Thank you. But I'm also, it's just a thing where it's like, it's cute until a point, and And it's like, I can't with it. Because it feels contrived.
Yes.
Especially with intelligent people. It's like, and, you know, there is like this sort of trained voice. It's like a cute voice. Like,
yes.
I don't want to be too threatening.
Yeah.
Because if I talk like this, and I'm going to be like really cute, and you're going to really like me. And gay men can do it too. Sometimes they put it on so that it's like they're not going to be too threatening in a way that it's like, I don't know that that's actually your voice.
It makes
and
me want to shake
like
people.
Problematic
when I
because you don't want to say that to women or to gay. Like, is that really your voice?
I know.
But you really do want, sometimes you wonder, like, what's that about? And, like, where is that coming from? Because it is.
It's very performative, also.
Yes, and it's pleading for attention in a way that, you know.
Yeah.
You always
taking
always
the
do.
Floor.
Yes.
Or, like, taking the space, kind
yes,
of. Yeah.
As they do.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I'm glad you figured out that's what that is and that's where it's from. And that's so crazy.
Well, it was a whole bunch of things that happened. I mean, but like, you know, I've had to figure out why I'm so anxious because I got super anxious about 3 years ago. Mm. And so I've had to unravel my whole life and go, okay, what happened? And I think that was a key trauma. Uh-huh. Among traumas.
Well, yeah, that's right? a huge thing.
Yeah, among traumas.
Yeah. Would you please do a show called Among Traumas?
Among my traumas. You know what I started watching recently, I've gotten obsessed with, is My 600-Pound Life.
Oh,
I have watched that one.
I know, people can't watch it. I know.
I mean, I'm fascinated by anyone that's fused to a couch, but that is...
I know, but here's the thing. I don't know why I kept watching it. I really don't. But then I started watching it, and what happens at first, you're completely repulsed, and you're like, just stop eating. Why are you eating that? Blah, blah, blah. And then as the show goes on, you start feeling compassion for them.
Oh, it's heartbreaking.
And they're trying to lose weight. Then by the end, when they've lost like 200 pounds or something, and they get their gastric problem, you're just like so happy for them. And I'm like, what a weird thing that you're really rooting for them, which surprised me because at first it was just so repulsive.
I know, but then I get so mad and jealous when I'm like, when Mama June loses all that, it's like a size 4 now.
That doesn't happen
from Honey Boo
on the show that much.
You know, no, but I'm like, I can't, I'm not a 4. Like, all this time she's been losing all this weight. I'm like, what have I been doing?
Yeah.
What have I been doing?
But I think we
just
also,
sitting on my couch eating pork rinds.
We love story. It's like a human thing to need a beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah.
And so we love watching and we live vicariously through other people. And it's like, whether that's in, you know, and I, you know, I get through, I just get so, like, such a stickler about, like, as a writer and an actor, I'm like, I want stories told to you by writers and actors.
Right.
And like, I want, if it's a documentary, there's such an art to a documentary.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And a lot of reality shows have a lot of art in them as well. And you have to realize that they're not all trash. There's a lot of, you know, but it is that structure that we want them to win.
Yeah. Oh,
you start to follow someone and you're like, I want them, I've got to find out.
Right.
And some of the editors on those shows are like, heroes.
Oh,
the completely. Things that they come up with are just, I mean, the way that they weave a story together, like they're doing so much of the work.
Yeah.
That made me think, actually, that sort of dovetails into this.
I'm going to hear your story.
I wanted to tell, but it's not really about me. It's sort of about me. I'm in it.
All right.
Is that
but
good?
You had another story from your childhood.
That's the one from my childhood.
Yeah. Oh, good. Oh, good, good, good.
But speaking of pork rinds and couches and 600-pound lives, it made me think of this. But and it's real. I feel bad because it's not like totally. I wish I was telling you something more revealing about myself.
Oh,
but,
it's fine.
But maybe what
it's
will
minor,
happen is
minor,
that maybe my I point believe. Of view will be revealed, and you'll be like, "Oh, you're a terrible person,
yeah,
and you always have been."
That's
really
like.
Cute. That's so cute. No, and then as I was saying, I had like when I met Julie when I came in just to further make her uncomfortable.
I love.
I was like, I had been in my mind about this story, which I hadn't thought about in a while, and I was like, it took me back to that time, which was that I grew up in a family of six kids in 8 years, so it was like a very packed household.
That is a lot.
And we all had our own bedrooms, so it was like, even though it was packed, there was always somewhere to retreat to some extent. I mean, I don't remember anyone ever knocking on my door, but, you know, in theory, you had your own space.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, I'm the fifth, and at some point, people started to go to college, and so the house became emptier in a good way. You would think. You would think if you had been living like with circus performers for a while. And it was like, you know, like those people that have cats, like big cats.
Oh, sure.
Where like when they lose a panther, you think like, oh, okay, well, there's a little more room for the Siberian tigers now. You know, and it's like, nope, we're going to get another panther in here. Like they
I've seen those documentaries. I've seen that.
You've seen Cat People, haven't you?
I've seen Cat People.
Oh, my God.
Cat People, and I've seen Roar. I know all those.
Was Roar the movie?
With Tippi Hedren and Melanie Griffith.
When Melanie Griffith gets mauled over over a 15-year period of time.
Yes, yes.
I saw that for the first... Oh,
have
my
you
God.
Seen that movie,
no, I want to see it.
Holy shit.
It's crazy. I'm sorry, keep going.
No, not at all. One, I do want to aside, we can talk about it afterwards, but I need to talk about whether anyone has seen The Woman in Red.
The Woman in Red.
The Gene Wilder movie.
Kelly LeBrock, of course.
Yeah. No. Wait.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Did you see it like a long time ago?
A million times as a child. I love that movie, but
okay,
I haven't seen
we're
it
we're going to have to talk about it
okay,
in a
great.
Minute because I had a traumatic experience watching it the other
okay.
night. it may have ruined Gene Wilder for me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
wow.
Which is a really intense thing to have happen when you think Gene Wilder.
The greatest.
Who could ruin Gene Wilder? And then you watch that thing and you're like... putting the pieces together of what happened here.
Okay.
Anyway, to be continued. But the I really do hope we continue that if we have time.
Yes.
But anyway, so my mother had this friend who started an English language school. And so she supposedly wanted like good families for these students because they were coming from wealthy homes or something. Who knows? Or she just was starting the school and needed to put these kids somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother started taking these exchange students. And I was like, why are we taking these exchange students? Like, didn't we just get people out of here? You know, like, didn't I just stop fighting over the remote control with the five people above me?
Right, right.
And so I was like, what the fuck is going on? But also, you know, it's you're young, your mother's in charge. You know, it's not like you have a say at the, like, you know, board meeting of the family that you can, that you can vote against, you know, something. And so this was at the time when MTV was becoming like, that was everything, basically. MTV and HBO were everything. And Saturday Night Live. Those were the only three things that we had as children.
Sure.
And they were enough.
I know it all too well.
they were plenty and they were enough. And at 3:30 every day, I'm like, I'd like to go home and lay on my couch and like watch a little MTV right now.
Yeah.
Because MTV was also programmed so differently than what it is now. But anyway. Mm-hmm. And Pee-wee's Playhouse, we had Pee-wee's Playhouse. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so she took this one exchange student, Cesar, and I fucking hated Cesar. he was this big, fat, sloppy Mexican teenager. And I think he stayed with us for a year. It did not matter how long he was there. He did not learn any English. Okay. Not like hello, nothing. He and my brother spoke Spanish because my brother had been to, had done this program called Amigos de las Americas and he had been to Spain. And so he spoke Spanish so he could speak Spanish to Cesar. And I fucking hated Cesar. And I would he would get home from school before I would get home from school. And he would every day be downstairs in the basement, like in the basement we had like, you know, MTV and a bumper pool table and like it was you know, the gentleman's club.
Uh-huh.
And ridiculous. ColecoVision, you know, whatever.
Sure.
Atari 2600. I love the idea that I was living at like a Fun and Games. Fun and Games was the Dave and Busters of Boston.
Sure. Oh,
and
sure.
And so you'd get home and also he was like 6'2" and he would be laying across the entire couch and watching MTV, and his favorite of all time was Paula Abdul. And she owned poor Paula Abdul. I saw at Barney's pushing her dog in a stroller.
Of course,
not long ago.
Of course,
she looked just like Paula Abdul, but she was pushing her dog in a stroller.
Mm-hmm.
And so, anyway, the only words, of course, he learned were Paula Abdul, Paula Abdul. So he would lay on the couch and he would twist his finger like a siren, like in a circle, kind of, you know, and he'd be like, woo, woo, Paula Abdul, Paula Abdul. And he would he would eat an entire bag of Salsa Rio Doritos. That was like when Doritos started coming out with signature flavors.
Yes.
And he would drink a 2 liter of Coke.
Wow.
And you would never be able to get your hands on that. That was the only, we only had cable downstairs. So it was like, you would be like, you'd get home and it would just that was it. You'd have to go watch fucking Brady Bunch reruns upstairs, yeah, right. or like do your homework. So I just, and then my brother started to get him to play field, play street hockey with him. And so it would be like, you'd try to sneak in, but then you started liking that he was down there because you knew it was like, at least Cesar is fucking downstairs. Like he's locked up downstairs.
What was annoying about him? Was it just?
He was dumb. And he was just a big, dumb, stupid idiot.
Uh-huh.
Who nobody wanted. You know what I mean?
I love that you're so going back to the age then.
Oh, like, totally.
Like,
I know,
he's
right?
dumb.
He was
stupid.
Dumb and he was stupid and he was an idiot.
Was he cute at all?
No.
Okay.
But he didn't have acne. I will give him that.
Oh, there you go.
But mostly he was just in the way all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, it was right. like, that was right. really his biggest crime was that he was in the way and he couldn't communicate. It was like having Lenny from Of Mice and Men living in your house, where you'd be like, he's everywhere you wanted to go. He was in the right. way. He was probably madly in love with me for all I know.
Yeah.
You know, just because I hated him so much. And you knew he was jerking off and, you know, he was just a gross teenage boy. Yeah, it was like, right. you should be inflicting this on your family, not yes, on our family. Yes, yes. We already have a few of those.
Right.
So I just hated him. It's so mean. He was probably, he was so sad. His family didn't want him. Like, you know, as an adult, you're like, this poor kid. And he was right. so happy in our house because he would play with my brothers and stuff. And then finally, they moved him to another family. I don't remember why. Maybe he had to go to another school or he went and he came back and we took someone else or whatever. Anyway, there was a blizzard one day, of course, because we were in Boston. Mm-hmm. And so Cesar, who, you know, would drink his two-liter Coke, classic, and have his salsarias every day. There was a blizzard. And so he only wore those, like, L.L. Bean moccasins. So, like, no socks, boat shoes, basically.
Which and I have on right now. But yeah. mm-hmm.
No, that's like a Sperry Topsider, basically. Okay, okay. His were like those leather kind.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Like
yes,
bluchers,
yes, sure.
basically.
Okay, great.
So he would, he needed to get his Doritos and his and his Coke. And the store was like a mile from our, like a little store was like a mile from our house. So he put on his windbreaker and his shoes with no socks. And it was like one of those storms where it was like a foot and then another foot. Like it yeah. just came fast. And he walked up to the store. And so when my mother got home, of course, and we were all like idiots, mm-hmm. children, wild, rabid children. Yes. We were like, Cesar went out! Cesar went out in the blizzard! You know, like screaming, like whipping. Everyone was like, you can't go! You can't go! Don't go! And he was like, they should have studied him at Frito-Lay because he was so addicted yeah. to the crunch and the flavor. He had to have the salsarias.
He did that sugar thing.
And so he walked a mile in the snow to get the stuff and he came back. And when he came back, this isn't even going to be funny to you, but it's so funny to me. And my mother was like a complete drill sergeant. What she said went and she knew everything and that was it.
Uh-huh.
And everybody was like, so she came back and there he was and he, like, his face was bright red. I mean, he practically had frostbite
yeah.
from going to get the salsarias and the 2 liter of Coke. And my mother walked in and she saw him and she, like, you know, everybody had recounted to her what was going on, whatever. And he came, or maybe she was home and then he walked in like 2 minutes later mm-hmm. kind of thing. And she just turned to him and she goes, Cesar, no more Coke. That's it. Or whatever. And he looked at her and all of a sudden he had all this English, you know, and he was like, Peggy, please, you know, like, you can't cut me off. You can't cut me off. And she goes, no more Coke. And that was it. And then he lost 30 pounds.
Wow.
And he stayed with us like for another couple months and he lost 30 pounds. Like from he became like a normal boy just from not, just from not drinking. Just from not having an extra 5,500 calories.
I also was
going to
say, I can't believe that he would be there for a year and not know English. I was like, he was withholding.
Yeah.
When he knew the English. I was like, there's just no way.
It is so sad when you look back on it. Can you imagine just sending your kid off for as long as it takes for them to learn anything?
No.
It was just clear, like, no one, they didn't want him. Right. You know, I don't know what number he was or if his father got remarried or his mother got, you know what I mean? It was just sort of like.
Well, you're right. But also when you are a kid, you're not aware of all the other things. You're just like, I don't like this idiot
he's
in my
disgusting.
House and he's not my brother. And that's like.
And he's like destroying the bathroom.
And that's why kids are so awful. Kids are so mean because they're not aware that like of all the circumstances and what's going on and what's going into
it. Totally.
And,
no, and they don't have compassion.
And
they
don't, no, not at all. And it's just like, you have what I want and you're in my way. And
you're in the way.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
But okay, I would never, just for the record, I would never say to his, I would never tease him to his face and be like, you're disgusting.
No.
Well, that makes you nice because some
I don't know if it makes me nice, but it may, I mean, I'm sure he knew I would despise him because I would be like, he doesn't, I just wouldn't talk to him.
But also, like, how old were you at this point?
Probably like 13.
Yeah. Like,
or no, maybe
like
12.
Boys are grow-
11
like
or 12.
Like,
yeah.
Ugh,
oh, and boys are just sprouting.
We had a lot of my family would have exchange students a lot too, and we would
really?
Sometimes come home. Well, we had a French exchange student the summer before my eighth grade year, and I
was
in love with him. I didn't realize that I was, but I look back and I'm like, oh, I was in love with him. But my brother, he and my brother
missed opportunity.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I mean, I was 12, maybe 13. I was 13 and he was 16. And it was like, I was like, what's going on here? And, but he and my brother hated each other. It was like, because my brother is 2.5 years younger than me. And so it was just like, it was not cool. You know, it was like, there was such a divide age wise. And it was like, he was like there for the whole summer, you know?
Ugh, why did your parents do it?
I'm not sure exactly. I think that they were, I know that there were in other situations, like my dad was in Rotary and so like Rotary Club. And so like we would have like guest people like would stay. Uh-huh. Like I remember there was like an Indian man that lived in our house for a while. And we had like we had some members from the Austrian boys choir
that
stayed with us. And they were super creepy, super weird.
How long were they there?
They were there for maybe a week, but they had zero sense of humor and they were just very serious. And they were the little trained performers. And they also were, you know, that part of Europe where they're just like, they just don't find humor.
They don't have humor.
Hitler youth.
And so there's a lot of that. And our family is just so bawdy and Southern and loud and wah, 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 wah. And it was like, they were just like, we're going to be murdered by these people. And so, I'm glad in retrospect, I think it was a cool way of like showing us the world. Like we were in small town, North Carolina. And I think there was their way of being like, we're going to bring the world to you and see like there are people from, you know, around the world. And but I'm not sure exactly what inspired it. If like my mom read an article in the paper, like there's something and she was like, that would be a fun thing for the summer.
And also once they agree to it, they have to do it.
Yes.
You know, it's like she might have thought it was a bad idea after a week, but now you agreed to it.
Right.
My mother would have never done it. My mother, we couldn't even have, I mean, she hated our cat. She would not let an exchange student in the house.
There are still scents that set me off. I don't know what it is, but there is this cheap perfume, which is very popular in Mexico for some reason. And I will, because I have deduced that we had Claudia, this one exchange student. She would wear so much of this fucking perfume. And every now and again, I'll be walking down the street in LA and I'll be like,
You're sensitive to smells. And
like, I'm like, oof, like Claudia.
It's a lot.
A Claudia cloud.
Yeah. Now we're almost out of time. So really quickly, I want us to go back to Gene Wilder.
Okay.
Finish this thought.
So the movie's on. Kelly LeBrock, we all love from Weird Science, of course.
Sure.
And Mrs. Steven Seagal.
Mm-hmm.
And she totally had her moment.
She just left the business. She just announced she's left the business.
Except that she's back in.
I know. Right? That's why we're having that feeling of general malaise.
She actually, it's because her daughter is on this new like Models Junior show. I don't know what it's called, but it's like famous people that are semi-famous people that have daughters that want to be models. But her daughter's also like 24. And I'm like, you missed that model boat. The model boat came 6 years ago. You were supposed to get on it.
Right.
And they, whatever. Yes, there was some bullshit story about how she was like, I had to go away to raise my kids. And it was like, I didn't even know you were still alive.
Yeah.
But anyway. Gene Wilder. So I'm watching this movie. And we kind of, it opens, he's on a ledge, da da da, whatever. And then it's all kind of like told backwards. And I was like, what the fuck is this movie about? Like, she does a Marilyn Monroe thing on a vent.
Yeah.
And it's,
which is the poster of the movie.
Yeah. And it's just about a man who sees a woman on the way to work one day and becomes obsessed with her. Obviously, he's having a midlife crisis or something. And he becomes obsessed with this woman and he has to have her. But it's also 84, I think it came out. And so it's also a time when it was like, oh, if your dick is leading you somewhere, you're totally allowed to fuck whatever the thing is.
Oh, yeah.
And so I started going, like, we're watching this movie. I'm like, who directed this movie? Like, it's like, no one knows where, they don't know where to put a camera. They're stacking four actors. And also you're like, Gene Wilder's been sitting in that car for 11 minutes. Like, what, who would do this? So I'm like, of course, I start IMDBing while I'm watching it. Gene Wilder directed it.
Oh.
And I was like, what? And Gilda Radner is playing like...
Gilda Radner is a crazy woman who's obsessed with him.
A crazy office mouse creep.
Yeah, this she breaks the windshield wipers on the car.
It's the antenna.
Oh, the antenna on the car. Yeah.
And none of it is adding up. And then, of course, there's like Kelly LeBrock, for no good reason, eventually is like, come meet me in L.A. I'm on a photo shoot. You know, like to Gene Wilder, whose name he doesn't even know, who's still Gene Wilder. Like, and
he's
so
he's playing himself.
No, he's playing Teddy or something like that. But it's like he's a pubic hair headed middle aged man who we love from Young Frankenstein.
Sure.
But, you know, like he's Gene Wilder.
Right.
And she's Kelly LeBrock. And also I'm like, how old is she in this movie? She's 22. He's 50. Gilda Radner's 37. OK.
Wow.
And I'm like, my whole head is exploding because Gilda Radner is Gilda Radner, of course.
Yeah.
She dies 5 years after this movie.
Right.
And Rollin was like, oh, maybe this is the movie that they fell in love on. Because I was like, somebody explain this to me, how she could make this movie with him. And he's like, maybe this is the movie they fell in love on.
No, they were together.
They were already engaged when they made this movie.
Yes.
In fact, they got married like on the press tour for this movie in France or something. And I can't in my mind figure out why he would make this movie. That so much
crazy
that he wanted to direct it,
this,
and it's so creepy, this movie.
It's crazy to,
like, it's
in our lifetime, what movies, what we accept, like, it's like,
but he's
National
a creep.
Lampoon's Vacation, which is one of my favorite movies but you're, the whole movie, it's like, a married man is chasing Christy Brinkley across the thing, and that's just fun, you know?
Yeah.
And like, Beverly and
you're hoping
just
to,
has to accept.
And you're hoping to God he beds her.
And then, yes.
Yeah, you're rooting for him.
They're in the pool together, and then she just comes out, she's like, Clark, and it's like, oh, well, silly Clark. And that's just not, he doesn't get any comeuppance.
Yep.
He doesn't ever get told.
Right.
He can't do that.
He walks into his mother's birthday party with Kelly LeBrock. And Charles Grodin is gay in this movie.
Ugh.
And
I never need to hear that sentence ever again.
No, but it was like, he walks into his mother's birthday party and he brought this 22-year-old model with him to the birthday party. It was so crazy. And then at the end, there's a buzzer and she's like, that must be my husband. He's a pilot. Don't worry. He never stays. Like, it was like, what is happening?
What is happening?
And her husband, she pulls up a picture out of her drawer of her husband and he's like 70.
Oh my God.
The whole thing was so weird.
Well, in 1986,
made me sad about Gene Wilder.
2 years later, we had a movie, or 87 maybe, where C. Thomas Howell was like, I'm not getting into schools because I'm white, so I'm going to take melatonin pills and I'm going to dye my skin black.
Oh God, I'd forgotten about
that. And that was just a wacky comedy, you know?
Oh,
yeah.
Soul
right.
Man.
I guess my main issue is that Gene Wilder felt so compelled to direct it.
Yes.
Like, he wasn't just in a bad, I was like, oh, he's in a terrible movie.
Right.
And then I was like, oh, he's responsible for this terrible
movie.
He also wrote it.
Oh, no.
It was a remake of a French film.
Which I can believe.
Yeah, I was like, oh, in French, this makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, anyway.
Sorry to bore everybody to
death. No, I love that. I was like, we have to find out the answer to that because, you know, we'll get flooded with three or four tweets.
I have to watch it in the original French now.
We're out of time, but I want to thank my guests, Jessica Chafin and Julie Brown, much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
This has been a delightful afternoon. I really needed this today.
I
really
do actually
feel way better.
I feel like a sizable lift.
Yeah.
I know, me too.
Same here. All right. You guys, this has been another episode of Drew Droege's Minor Revelations. Have a week.